advance that I've attempted. Even the half-naked ones. I've even gone as far as telling him I was going to go out with Max.
Because you thought making him jealous might get him to react?
I shook my head while staring at the floor.
Well, normally I'd say that a man who doesn't show his interest without games is a player and not worth your time. But we know my grandson's struggle isn't about being a bachelor who doesn't want to settle down. He's afraid to burden someone he loves with his condition.
That's the thing. Reed thinks he's a burden, but the truth is he has a burden, and it's easier to handle when it's shared.
Iris stared at me.
You've really fallen for him, haven't you?
A warm tear slipped down my face as I nodded.
I know he cares about me, too. I can see it.
You're right. He does. The two of you fight like an old married couple, flirt like you're in high school, and confide in each other like your lifelong best friends. My grandson isn't pushing you away because he's afraid to fall for you. He's pushing you away because he already has.
But what do I do?
Keep pushing back, however you need to. He'll come around. I just hope it's not too late when he does.
Iris reached out and took my hand.
You've been hurt before. And with Reed, you're fighting another uphill battle. Don't forget to put yourself first. Push Reed, but keep pushing yourself too, Charlotte.
The more I thought about my conversation with Iris, the more I realized she was right. I needed to push myself, keep working on the things that I'd let slip over the years. So I vowed to at least make progress on my fuck-it list each and every week, no matter how small that might be. Digging out the list I'd printed and tucked away in my drawer, I poured myself a glass of wine and sat at my kitchen table, ruminating over which item I should work on first. Sculpt a nude man. Dance with a stranger in the rain. Learn French. Ride an elephant. Go skinny dipping in a lake at night. Well, that one I can cross off, can't I? Find my birth parents. Make love to a man for the first time in a sleeper cabin on a train ride through Italy. I'd added a new entry to my list last week while sitting in the back of an Uber on the highway and watching the big rigs glide down the road. Learn how to drive an 18-wheeler. I chewed on my pen cap while deciding what to tackle first. There was one that I kept coming back to. Honestly, it was time. Find my birth parents. I'd been curious about my biological parents my entire life. My mom and dad had always been open about the fact that I was adopted, and they'd encouraged me to talk about it. Yet I was always afraid that if I did, I'd make my parents feel like they weren't enough, when in fact they were more than enough. They were everything a child could have wanted. Somehow, though, that still didn't plug the hole I had from not knowing anything about my family history. I wanted to know my birth parents' story. Had they been young? Had they loved each other? I also wanted to let them know that I was okay, that the decision they'd made was the best one for me, and that I'd turned out pretty good. Finishing the glass of wine, I took a deep breath and picked up the phone. It rang once, then a second time. My mother answered on the third ring.
Hi, Mom. Charlotte, is everything okay?
I heard the panic in her voice. I called every Sunday afternoon like clockwork, but it was Friday right now.
Yes, everything is great.
Oh, okay, well, that's good. What are you up to this evening? I thought about chickening out, but then I thought about what Iris had said.
Keep pushing yourself.
I'm actually making a list of things I want to do. Sort of like a bucket list, but not, since I'm not sick or old.
Are you sure everything's okay, sweetheart?
I'd called off schedule and started talking about making a bucket list. I should have realized that she'd be alarmed. I needed to explain myself better or she'd be worried.
Yes, everything is really good, Mom. I kind of forgot who I was when Todd and I were together. I sort of merged into his life and put things that I wanted out of life on the back burner. So I made a list of things I wanted to do to remind myself to live my life for me. If that makes any sense?
It does, and it sounds like you've done a lot of soul searching. I'm happy to hear you say you're going to focus on yourself. I hope none of the things are too dangerous, though.
They're not. Mom stayed quiet for a long time. She knew me.
Is there anything on your list that I might be able to help with?
I took another deep breath.
Yeah, Mom, there is.
I've been thinking about taking a trip into the city. Why don't I come in on Sunday so we can talk in person?
I'd like that.
Okay, how about around noon then?
That's perfect. We talked for a little while longer, skirting around the issue we both knew was on the horizon. She asked the usual about my job, friends, finances. Right before we hung up, she said,
Charlotte, you have nothing to feel guilty about. I know you love me.
My shoulders relaxed. Thanks, Mom. On Monday morning, I arrived at the office earlier than usual. I'd planned on getting a head start on my day so that I could leave on time and go over to the Center for Arts to sign up for a sculpting class. But I'd gotten so distracted reading on my phone while I waited for the coffee to finish brewing that I hadn't even realized the sensor had beeped, indicating it was done, and that someone had walked up behind me.
Baseball? I didn't realize you were a fan.
Startled, I bobbled the phone and it fell to the ground.
You scared the hell out of me.
Reed bent over and picked up my cell.
You're extra jumpy this morning, even for you.
He glanced at the screen.
Are you going to the game tonight?
What game?
He smirked.
Guess that answers that question.
He handed me my phone, pulled our mugs down from the cabinet, and began to pour coffee.
I saw the Houston Astros logo on your phone when I walked in. You were reading stats, weren't you?
Oh, yes.
He arched a brow.
Baseball fan?
Not really.
Gambling?
Huh?
Why else would someone be reading baseball stats if they weren't going to a game, a fan of baseball, or gambling?
I find statistics fascinating.
Reed gave me a face that said, bullshit.
What? I do.
He finished making our coffees and handed me my mug. Sipping his, he looked straight into my eyes.
What's the real reason, Charlotte?
I sighed. I had no reason to lie to him. Yet talking about wanting to find my birth parents out loud always made me feel like I was betraying my adopted mother. I struggled, even though she'd assured me that wasn't the case last night. Reed had already seen my fuck-it list, so he'd understand. I spoke to my mother about my adoption yesterday. I pretty much knew almost everything she told me already. The only real new information I found out was that when they found me at the hospital, I was wrapped in a Houston Astros blanket. Something flickered across Reed's face.
A Houston Astros blanket?
I nodded. I didn't know what the logo looked like, so I searched for it on the internet, and I wound up on the team's site. I guess I got sucked into reading all the statistics while my mind wandered. He stared at me, yet his eyes seemed to lose focus. Reed was definitely acting strange. I joked, "Are you a Yankees fan and we can't be friends or something, since I was swaddled in an Astros blanket?"
"I gotta go," he said abruptly. "I have an appointment I'm late for."
Chapter 29. Reed. The Texas lead was huge. Josh ended up spending 2 weeks in Houston on my dime. I needed more time to figure out how to handle telling Charlotte what was going on and how to get her mind off finding her birth parents until I could be absolutely sure how I was going to approach this. So I decided to create a distraction, one that I probably needed my head examined for. I'd noticed that Charlotte had recently added "Learn how to drive an 18-wheeler" to her fuck-it list on the server. Only Charlotte. I decided that the ultimate distraction on a Friday afternoon was to somehow make that happen, managing to rent an actual 18-wheeler from a distribution company. They parked it for me in an empty lot in Hoboken. We didn't have much daylight left as we pulled in. Charlotte had no idea why we were there. "I thought you said we were going to see a new property. Why are we here in this empty lot?" Turning off the car, I said, "You've really worked hard for the company these past couple of months. As complicated as our personal relationship is, I'm also your boss. I feel like I don't really tell you enough, as your boss, how appreciated you are. You had to take me to a desolate parking lot in Hoboken to do that. If we're in Jersey, a diner would have been better. Look over there. Charlotte's eyes landed on the big rig. It's a truck. Not just any truck. An 18-wheeler. She finally saw what I was getting at. You've been spying on me. Did you not recently add driving one of those bad boys to your fuck it list? Realization set in and her face lit up. Are you serious? I'm here to drive one? Well, we can't take it on the road, especially because you don't even have a car driver's license. I don't think either one of us is ready to die tonight, but you can have your fun on this lot. Noticing who I assumed was the instructor I'd hired arriving, I nudged my head for her to follow me out of the car. Come on. Charlotte walked alongside me over to the vehicle, which had the words J.B. Lemon Distribution painted on the side. A scruffy man with a long white beard got out of an older Ford Taurus. Good afternoon, folks. He looked Charlotte up and down. You must be Charlotte.
Yes, sir.
I'm Ed. Ready to drive? She looked at me and smiled, then bounced back on the heels of her feet.
I am.
Charlotte took the driver's seat while the instructor, whose name was Ed, sat on the passenger's side. I crouched down behind them in what looked like the driver's sleeper cabin. The very first thing you need to do is check your fluids.
Oh, I'm okay. I drank a lot of water today.
He laughed. Fluids are at the front of the truck, darling. I'll show you. I whispered in her ear, darling, should I say it like that from now on? Charlotte quickly followed him outside before they returned. Now, you need to adjust your seat with these switches here. You're going to need to come way up to have the best view over the hood. He was definitely taking full advantage of the situation as he leaned into her from the passenger side. This whole experience was pissing me off. Now, you can start your diesel, but before you do, you're going to push in your clutch and make sure you're in second gear. Charlotte started the engine. The roaring diesel sound resonated throughout the space, and the fumes infiltrated the air. Now, pretend you're looking out to see if the other vehicles are coming. If it's clear, you're going to slowly let out your clutch. Charlotte continued to carefully follow his instructions. Now give it some gas. Bring the RPMs up to about 1,200. Then clutch out, clutch in. She was asking questions as if she was seriously planning to drive one of these someday. My eyes just kept fixating on his hands over hers as they switched gears. Pebbles of sweat were forming on my forehead as the big rig started to move. I was a lost cause. Woohoo! Charlotte screamed as she made her first turn around the lot. After a half-hour drive, she put the truck in park. Ed took off, leaving Charlotte and me alone in the big rig.
That was seriously amazing, Reed.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. What had started as a stalling mechanism had turned into an experience I was happy to share with her. Charlotte's joy was always contagious. It also made me feel good to help her knock another item off her list. It was quiet inside the truck. The only noise was faint traffic from the highway in the distance. Charlotte decided to climb in the back where I was sitting and lie down on the bed that was located just behind the driver's seat in the cab. I swiftly moved up front to the passenger seat. She kicked her feet up.
So this is how truckers live, huh? I think that would be kind of a cool job, traveling the country, stopping and sleeping in different places.
Aside from the risk of falling asleep and killing oneself, I suppose it could be fun, I said sarcastically. She playfully threw a pillow at me, then said,
Of course they do it alone. I wouldn't want to travel alone.
As she curled into the bed to make herself more comfortable, it was evident that Charlotte had no intention of leaving the truck anytime soon. God, how I wanted to lie next to her. If I'd known I was taking her to a sex den on wheels, I most certainly would have rethought this truck adventure. It had never occurred to me that there would be a bed. I stayed glued to the passenger seat, determined not to get sucked into the vortex.
Can we hang out in here for a while? She asked.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Why not? It's so peaceful.
I just think it's better if we go back to the city.
Because you don't trust yourself with me?
I refuse to answer that, instead deciding to turn the tables. Don't you have somewhere to be, like a date with Blake? His name rolled off my tongue like an obscenity.
No, I'm not going out with Blake. But why do you ask?
Would you be jealous if I did? Not wanting to lie to her, I just chose to remain silent. My jealousy had already been made pretty clear a couple of weeks ago anyway.
Why should you be jealous when you know you could have me, Reed?
I can't have you, I snapped.
Oh, but you can. You're just scared.
Stop, I said through gritted teeth, even though all I really wanted was to hear her tell me some of the things she would let me do to her. I shook my head and sighed.
Where did you come from, Charlotte?
You always ask me that. While I can't answer where I originated from, I know exactly how I came into your life. There's something you don't know, something I never told you.
What was she getting at?
I'm not following.
Can I tell you the story of how we met?
I know how we met.
You think you do, but you don't. You always thought that I was playing some kind of game when I went to the Millennium Tower showing. There's way more to the story.
I'd always wondered how that whole thing happened, how she came to show up there in the first place. It never quite made sense. There'd been something missing.
Why don't you enlighten me, then? How did you come into my life, Charlotte, darling?
She patted the spot on the bed next to her.
Will you come here? Sit next to me?
I'd rather not.
Please?
Reluctantly, I moved to the spot on the bed next to her. Our shoulders were side by side when I turned my face to meet hers.
Okay, Charlotte, tell me how we met.
It was fate, she said matter-of-factly. I chuckled.
Fate?
Yes.
How do you know that?
I'd taken my wedding dress to a consignment store to sell it. While there, I fell in love with a beautiful blush feathered dress.
Feathered dress.
Suddenly, this wasn't amusing anymore. I swallowed, knowing exactly the dress she was talking about. Even though it was supposedly bad luck to see the bride's gown before a wedding, Allison had insisted that I approve of her choice. While unconventional, the dress she'd chosen was spectacularly beautiful.
I know the dress, I whispered.
So you'd seen it? She'd shown you?
Yes.
I found the blue note you'd written on your personalized notepad. It was sewn inside. That was how I got your name. I actually took the dress home because they would only give me a credit for mine. So it was an even exchange. I still have it. It's hanging in my closet. I was curious about the man who penned the note because it was simple yet so beautiful.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Biting my lip, I stayed silent as she continued to tell the story.
When I looked you up on Facebook, there were some clues that maybe the wedding had never happened. Anyway, you already know everything that took place after I made the appointment. I obviously never expected everything to turn out the way it has, but that dress called to me. And now I know it was much more than just a dress. Not to mention my running into Iris in the bathroom, I'll always believe that I was meant to find you.
Holy shit. I couldn't help reaching for her hand in that moment.
I'd joked about Charlotte Darling and her pixie dust. There was always something magical about her, the way she'd just appeared in my life and turned it upside down. I had to admit that this story freaked me out a little, but at the same time, it made so much sense. I cleared my throat.
I don't know what to say.
You're not mad at me?
Why would I be mad at you for that?
Because I violated your privacy?
I can't be mad at you.
Despite how you got here,
you came into my world and breathed life into it when I really needed it.
And now you're pushing me away.
Charlotte, we've been through this.
She went quiet, then said, you know, despite being hurt, I don't regret how everything started. That note really helped me. I read it, and it gave me hope that love and romance do exist, at a time when I was down on life and love. Even if it was an illusion, it still helped me turn over a new leaf.
She was being so candid. Why couldn't I give her a little of that back?
I wanted her to know that it wasn't all an illusion.
You weren't that off base about me, Charlotte, I spit out. The note was sincere. It's only in hindsight that I'm able to see the situation for what it was, that Allison's love for me didn't match mine for her. So the love I had for her was based on a false ideal. But the man you thought you knew from that note, he did exist to a certain extent. I blew out a deep, ragged breath. It's funny. That note stood for something to you. I hung on to a note myself, one that Allison had written, but for an entirely different reason. When she broke off the engagement, it wasn't exactly a heartfelt moment. She showed up at my office a week before our wedding, sat down in a guest chair across from me, and said that when she agreed to marry me, she thought I was going to take care of her for the rest of her life, not the other way around. I think I was in shock while she spoke for a few minutes after that. It was all very cold and businesslike. But before she left, she took a piece of my stationery from my desk and wrote her new telephone number on it. She'd apparently already gotten a new phone since she was on my cell plan. I kept that piece of stationery in my top drawer for the longest time. Not because I ever thought about calling her, but to remind me of how that moment made me feel. I shook my head and looked down. Every day when I saw that note, it felt like pouring salt on a wound. Then 2 days ago, I opened the drawer, looked at it one last time, wadded it into a ball, and tossed it in the garbage. I'm not even sure what made me finally do it. I guess it was just time. Charlotte stared at me as silence filled the truck. With each second that passed, I felt more and more like being in this truck alone with her, given all the emotions lingering in the air, was dangerous. "Every time I wear it, I think of you. I'm wearing it right now," she said. It took me a few seconds to figure out what she was talking about. It wasn't the dress. She's wearing it right now. Oh. "Want to see it on me?" "Yes, yes, fuck yes, no." She chose not to listen when she hiked up her skirt and opened her legs, displaying my favorite black thong with the red rose accent. Clearly, she was trying to kill me. "I think about your hands caressing the lace every time I put this on." My voice was gruff. "Close your legs." "Why? Do you think this makes me a slut because I want to show you? Because I'm really not a slut. I haven't had sex in ages, and even though I wish I could move on, there's only one man I want to be intimate with." My body was heating up fast. "Put your skirt down." "Do you really want me to? Because you don't look like you do. You're sweating, and you haven't taken your eyes off it. I don't really think that's what you want. I think your mind is telling you one thing, and your body is pulling you in another direction. But okay, I'll close my legs." Just when my pulse started to slow the tiniest bit, I realized while she had closed her legs, she was now slipping off her thong. Charlotte lifted it to my line of sight. "You want it?" "Yes, yes, fuck yes, no." "Here." She opened my hand, placing the thong inside before closing my fingers over it. I was shocked to feel wetness in my palm. Not only had she given me her panties, she'd given me her wet panties. My dick stirred. Charlotte wrapped her arms around her knees and watched me start to unravel. Unable to resist, I buried my nose in the lacy fabric and deeply inhaled the sweet feminine scent of her arousal. And that was it. That was what finally undid me, like a drug evaporating my inhibitions. I needed more. Turning my body toward her, I laid my head on her stomach, trying to salvage any trace of sanity. There was none. I closed my eyes as I lowered my head to her legs, spreading her knees apart. Charlotte let out a slight, nervous giggle. "You think this is funny?" I said, as I voraciously kissed her in her thighs.
"I do. I..."
She stopped talking the moment my mouth landed hard on her pussy, which was completely bare. I couldn't get enough of her soft skin as my tongue swirled over her swollen flesh. My scruff might have been scratching her, but she didn't seem to mind. Her throbbing clit was evidence of that. "Just this once," I kept telling myself. Never in my life had I wanted to weep into a vagina until now, because the thought of never having this again was torture. This taste, this pussy, this woman would be the end of me. In my bones, in my heart, I knew that Charlotte was made for me.
and giving her up would be like a slap in the face of the very universe who'd sent her to me. I had no idea how I was going to let her go. You taste better than I could have ever imagined. With her hands wrapped around my head, Charlotte pushed me deeper into her. This woman whom I'd lusted after for so long was suddenly coming against my mouth. It felt surreal. I hadn't expected her to climax so soon. My dick was ready to explode. "I'm sorry," she said. "Don't you apologize. That was the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced." "Well, then we do agree on some things," Charlotte said as she got up and began to straddle me. "Your turn." "No." Even though I was protesting, I gripped her hips and pushed her bare pussy over my rock-hard erection that was straining through my pants. My mouth enveloped hers. Closing my eyes, I relished the feel of her heat as she ground over me. Kissing her harder, I threaded my fingers through her silky hair. Fuck if I knew how to stop this. I spoke over her lips. "My dick stays in my pants. We can't do anything more than this. Do you understand? This moment of vulnerability doesn't change a goddamn thing." My words may have been defiant, but my actions were weak. I lifted her shirt over her head and pushed her bra up over her breasts. There were those beautiful tits I'd dreamed about since the Adirondacks. I wasted no time placing my mouth over her breast and sucking so hard one would have thought I was trying to expel nectar. Who was I kidding? This wasn't going to end in my favor. My phone rang, but I ignored it. "Do you need to get that?" she asked. "No, fuck it," I growled, sucking on her breast harder. When it continued to ring, despite several attempts to ignore it, I reluctantly pried myself away from Charlotte, just long enough to check the caller ID to make sure it wasn't an emergency. It was Josh, the private investigator. Why would he be calling me repeatedly, unless something big was happening? That snapped me back to reality. Charlotte remained seated on my crotch as I picked up. "Hello?" His tone was serious. "Eastwood, you might want to pack your bags and head down here as soon as possible."
Chapter 30 Charlotte Reed looked troubled as he listened to what the caller on the other end of the line was saying. His dick was still throbbing under me through his pants. I was still on cloud nine, despite the seemingly urgent nature of his phone call. My heart started to pound rapidly once I began to really sense that something was wrong. "What's going on?" I interrupted. He held up his index finger as he continued to concentrate hard on the information he was being given.
"You need to email me all of this information as soon as possible."
He paused.
"All right. Good work, Josh. Thank you."
He tossed his phone aside and ran his fingers through his hair.
"Get dressed, Charlotte. We need to talk."
"What's happening?" Reed was flustered.
"Please, just get dressed."
"Okay." After I put my clothes back on, he said,
"I have to tell you something, and it's going to upset you, but I want you to know I had the best of intentions."
"All right."
"Charlotte, no matter what happens between us, I consider you one of the most important people in my life. I want you to have closure and peace when it comes to where you came from. I wanted to help you find your birth parents. I knew that if it were left up to you alone, it might take you years, if ever, to find them. I have a private investigator at my disposal, and I put him on the case full time."
"Oh my God, you what?"
"Josh has been on it for several weeks. He's spent an extensive amount of time in both Poughkeepsie and Houston."
"Houston?"
"Yes."
"What did he find?"
"It seems that a week before you were born, there was a girl who gave birth to a baby that was never assigned a social security number. The teenage girl left the hospital before she applied for it. Josh got a hold of the girl's medical intake form. She'd given a bogus name for herself, but she'd listed her nearest relative as Brad Spears, and that name checked out. He located Brad, who told him the real name of his friend who had disappeared years earlier. Her name is Lydia Vanderkamp. She was from Texas and had apparently been hiding her pregnancy from her parents."
My heartbeat began to accelerate.
Lydia is my mother?
Reed nodded.
It looked like it. This guy, Brad, and Lydia were pen pals when she ran away from her religious family and came to New York. He wasn't the baby's father, but Brad had a thing for her. The plan was that she'd stay, have the baby, and then they'd run away together. That's the part where things get a little fuzzy. For some reason, Lydia had a change of heart. She disappeared from the hospital and took the baby without telling Brad, and that's as much as he knows. Shortly after, you were discovered at the church. Josh located a Lydia Vanderkamp in Houston. She was the only person with that name in the area. Around that time, you told me you were found wearing an Astros blanket. That corroborated the Texas connection.
I covered my mouth. Oh my God.
Since then, Josh has been in Texas and has spoken to Lydia's children.
Children? I have siblings? Reed half smiled.
Yeah, she has two sons. They confirmed that their mother recently confessed that she'd abandoned a child in a New York church as a teenager. We don't have a blood test to confirm anything, but I think it's safe to say we found your mother.
I wanted to know what she looked like. Do you have a photo of her?
No, unfortunately I don't, but I can get that for you.
Nodding my head repeatedly to absorb all of this, I said, okay. I got the sense that he was hesitant to tell me something else. Is there more? Taking a deep breath, he closed his eyes.
She's dying, Charlotte.
My heart felt like it was disintegrating. What?
That phone call I just received brought some unsettling news. Apparently, Lydia has been suffering from complications of Crohn's disease, which hit her very hard and young. She got something called sclerosing cholangitis, which resulted in liver failure. She's on life support at the moment and is not expected to survive.
My mother is dying? She's so young. Oh my God. What does this mean? He paused.
It means you and I are heading to Texas.
Chapter 31. Reed. I hated having put her in this situation, but what was the alternative? She'd have regretted it for the rest of her life if she hadn't come to Texas. And as we stood in front of the hospital in the sweltering heat, an overcast sky was a fitting addition to this ominous day. Charlotte stopped short of the entrance. I'm not ready to go in yet. We can stay out here as long as you need. Placing my hand on her shoulder, I said, can I get you anything?
I need some water, I think.
Let's go to the cafeteria.
No, I want to stay out here. Can you just get me a drink and bring it back here?
Of course. Charlotte definitely wasn't in her right mind today. Who could blame her? That was farther evidenced by what I witnessed upon returning outside. The skies had opened up and it was pouring rain. I was walking back with two bottles of water when I noticed that Charlotte was dancing with the man who had been smoking a cigarette outside when I'd left her. They were smiling and laughing as they rocked back and forth with their hands intertwined. What the fuck? Then it hit me. Dance with a stranger in the rain. She'd decided to take this opportunity to knock an item off her fuck-it list. Kind of an odd moment to choose to do that, but if you knew Charlotte, you knew to expect anything. She'd likely needed the distraction from the stress right at this moment and had taken it. I was trying not to let my jealousy creep in. Charlotte stopped dancing when she saw me approach. This man was nice enough to humor me. I explained the fuck-it list. Don't worry, he smiled. I'm happily married. Didn't mean to offend. The look on my face must have been obvious. No offense taken. She turned to him.
Thank you. I really needed that.
My pleasure. As we walked away, I spoke in her ear. What's his name?
I have no idea. That would have defeated the purpose.
I shook my head and chuckled. Here's your water.
Thanks.
Charlotte opened the bottle and drank half of it down in one long gulp. We lingered for a few minutes just outside the door, and then I turned to her. Ready? Expelling a long breath, she held onto her stomach.
As ready as I'll ever be.
After we wrung out our clothes, we were given easy access to Lydia Vanderkamp's room just by saying we were family. No one bothered to question anything.
We weren't sure if we were going to run into her children, but when we got to the room, she was alone with a nurse. The woman flashed a friendly smile.
Hello?
Hi, Charlotte said, her gaze fixed on the comatose woman with tubes sticking out of her mouth.
Are you here to see Miss Lydia?
Yes.
You must be her daughter. You two look alike. I'm just changing out her bedsheets.
Can she hear what we say? Charlotte asked.
Well, she's heavily sedated. It's not really clear what she can and cannot hear.
After the nurse left, I lingered in the corner of the room to give Charlotte space. She made her way over to Lydia's bedside. The woman looked old beyond her years, likely from the stress of her illness. She was connected to a bunch of tubes, looking like the life had been drained out of her. Despite everything, I could see a trace of resemblance to her daughter. It took Charlotte a while to conjure up the courage to speak.
Hi, Lydia. I don't know if you can hear me. My name is Charlotte, and I'm your daughter. I just found out about you, actually. I rushed here as soon as I found out you were sick. I've dreamed about meeting you under different circumstances. I'm sorry that this happened to you. You're too young. It's not fair. I can see how much we look like each other. Now I know where my icy blonde hair came from.
Charlotte looked over at me. Her eyes were glistening, and I took that as my cue to go stand next to her, figuring she needed me for comfort. I held her hand as she continued to speak to Lydia.
Anyway, I'm here to tell you something. Whatever guilt you might have about leaving me at the church, let it go. Everything turned out the way it was supposed to. I have two wonderful parents whom I adore, so don't feel like you did a bad thing. You were young, and you made the decision you thought was best. Thank you for choosing a church, and not like, I don't know, a gas station or some other random place. They took good care of me there. I hope you can hear me. Everyone deserves peace, and I'm hoping to give that to you. Thank you for choosing to have me. I'll always be grateful to you for that, and I'll always love you for giving me life.
Charlotte rested her head gently at the edge of the bed near Lydia's nearly lifeless body. She took Lydia's hand and held it. A few moments later, Charlotte jumped.
Did you see that?
What?
She just squeezed my hand.
I didn't see it, but if you felt it, that's amazing.
I hope that means she heard me.
I placed both hands on her shoulders. I hoped so, too. I really felt for Charlotte. I couldn't imagine meeting my mother for the first time under these circumstances. She was being so strong, and I was really proud of her. The smoker from outside who danced with Charlotte in the rain suddenly appeared in the doorway. Why was he here?
Can I help you? I asked.
Depends. Can you make my mother come back to life? He said as he entered the room. Charlotte froze.
I just figured out who you are, Charlotte. We've been talking about you every day since that investigator left. I thought you looked familiar outside, but now I realize it was just because you look like a younger version of Mama. We've already met, but I'm Jason, your brother.
Tears filled Charlotte's eyes as she hugged him.
Oh, my God. Hi.
Jason's hands were trembling a little as he wrapped them around Charlotte's back. He smelled like a chimney, but on first impression, he seemed like a decent person. This was pretty damn surreal. He must have looked like his father because I would have never guessed that this dark-haired guy was Charlotte's brother.
How long has she been this bad? She asked him.
About a month.
Is there any hope?
He frowned. I'm afraid not. She's dependent on the machines at this point. We're in the midst of some tough decisions. Charlotte returned to her spot next to Lydia, then looked up at Jason.
I'm so sorry.
She loved you, Charlotte. She'd only recently told us about you. Mama was afraid to look for you because she thought maybe you'd hate her. But she carried you in her heart.
The tears that had been threatening started to stream down Charlotte's face as she stared at her newfound brother.
Can I stay until I want to spend time with her and with you. And my other brother, if that's okay?
He smiled. Mama'd like that. In fact, I can't think of anything else in this world that might bring her more peace than having you here today.
How long does she have?
Jason walked to the other side of his mother's, their mother's, bed, and covered the woman's other hand with his.
Not long. Weeks, days, maybe even hours. We've been struggling to take her off life support. We all had this feeling that it wasn't time yet. He looked up at Charlotte. Now it makes sense. We were all waiting for you. She was waiting for you.
Hey,
Charlotte whispered, blinking sleep from her eyes as she looked up at me. A few hours ago, she'd curled up in a ball on the chair next to her mother and fallen asleep. It was almost 2 in the morning, Texas time. She stretched her arms over her head and let out a big yawn.
How long did I sleep for?
Not long enough, a couple of hours.
Did Jason leave?
My first impression of Jason had been right. He turned out to be a pretty decent guy. We'd spent the hours while Charlotte slept getting to know each other. At only 22, he'd already served 4 years in the military and married his high school sweetheart. He'd also been the sole caregiver to Lydia the last few months since she'd taken a steep turn for the worse, and his mother clearly meant the world to him. I shook my head. He went downstairs to get us some coffee. I didn't want to go far in case you woke up and were confused. She gave me a sad smile.
Confused as to how I could be an only child pouring my boss coffee in New York yesterday, and tonight I'm halfway across the country and my brother is getting my boss coffee?
I reached over and squeezed her knee. Yeah, that, wise ass.
Did you get any sleep?
Not yet, but I booked us a hotel room nearby while you were snoring. Charlotte arched a brow.
A hotel room, as in one, not plural?
I booked a suite with 2 beds. I don't want you to be alone. She leaned to me and whispered in my ear.
Or maybe you were hoping I'd lift my dress for you again?
Jason walked back into the room, saving me from having to answer that. I'd actually debated over how many rooms to book for an hour and a half. In the end, I figured I'd already seen her naked, tasted her pussy, and lost my mind over this woman. I'd crossed the line by a mile. Comforting her and staying by her side as she struggled through this difficult time couldn't dig me any deeper. Her brother handed me a coffee from the cardboard carrying container, then turned to Charlotte. Got one with cream and sugar for you. Wasn't sure how you took it. Me and Ma take it light and sweet, so I figured maybe the taste is hereditary or something. She smiled.
That's perfect. Thank you.
Jason took a seat on the other side of the bed. Don't know how long you're planning on staying, but you should probably get some shut-eye. I don't have much room in my little apartment. I live in a studio with my wife. But you're welcome to stay at Ma's place if you want. I have her keys, and it's not too far from here. Maybe 15 minutes up the road.
Thanks, but Reed booked us a hotel nearby already.
You have a good husband, he looked at me. Though I think he could use some sleep. He was watching you like a hawk while you slept and looked as stressed as you were when you were awake. It hadn't occurred to me that we'd never labeled our relationship. Considering I'd been next to Charlotte the entire time, his conclusion was logical.
Oh, Reed's not my husband. He's my...
Charlotte struggled.
Boss.
Jason raised a brow and sipped his coffee. Boss.
Yes, he's my boss back in New York. I work at his company.
From the way he looked like he might murder me when he found us dancing outside and the way he watched you sleep, I just assumed. Charlotte glanced at me and then back to her brother.
It's complicated,
he smirked. I'd imagine it is. After we finished our coffees, Jason again suggested we go get some sleep. Even though Charlotte seemed hesitant, she agreed when he said that we should come back around 10 in the morning, since that was when they did rounds. The hotel I'd booked on my phone was walking distance from the hospital, and check-in was smooth and quick. It wasn't until the two of us were alone in the quiet room that I began to question if I'd done the smart thing by setting us up in a place with 2 giant beds.
I'm going to take a quick shower, Charlotte said.
Are you hungry? The hotel has a 24-hour room service menu. Why don't I order us something? You haven't eaten anything since before we left New York.
Okay, yeah. I guess we should eat. Thank you.
What would you like?
Whatever you're having.
Charlotte's drooping shoulders and the sadness in her voice were killing me. So 2 orders of double cheeseburgers, large fries, a milkshake, and dessert?
Sure.
I'd been teasing, although I didn't think she really wanted all that food. So I tested if she was paying attention. Okay, I'll also order a double of pig's knuckles and roasted squirrel. When I looked over at her, she responded, "That sounds good." She'd had no idea what I'd just said. Room service came just as Charlotte emerged from the bathroom. I wasn't sure if it had been really quick or her shower had been really long. I lifted the silver cover from the first plate. Chicken Caesar salad. Setting it down, I lifted the second cover. Or penne alla vodka.
"I'm sorry, I'm not really hungry,"
she sighed. Charlotte had on a thick white hotel robe, and her wet hair was wrapped in a towel on top of her head. She wasn't big to begin with, but buried underneath all that, she looked downright tiny in the moment. I rubbed at a spot on my chest, even though the pain was inside. "Come here." I opened my arms, and she didn't hesitate to walk into them. She closed her eyes and let out another loud breath as I wrapped her in a tight embrace. I stroked her back. "It's been a long day, or 2 days. You should get some sleep." She made no attempt to move, but nodded.
"Will you hold me? Lie with me, I mean?"
"Of course." Together, we went into the bedroom. I slipped off my shoes and took off my dress shirt, stopping short of removing my pants and white undershirt. Charlotte needed my support, not an erection prodding at her ass. Pulling back the covers, I slipped into the bed and held my arms out for her. She unwrapped the towel from her head and snuggled into me, her wet head resting on my chest right over my heart. I wanted to say something, to offer some sort of verbal support, but it felt like the words were trapped in my throat. Instead, I did what felt natural and stroked her head with one hand and her back with the other. After about 10 minutes, I thought she'd fallen asleep, but she whispered, "Thank you for this gift, Reed. Even though my heart is broken into 1,000 little pieces because she's slipping away and I'll never get to know her, in a weird way, I feel like it's the first time that I have all my pieces. I've always felt like a few were missing." I kissed the top of her head and firmed up my grip around her. "It's my pleasure, Charlotte. I just wish that things with her health could be different." A few minutes later, she drifted off to sleep. I chose to stay awake and enjoy the feeling of her sleeping peacefully in my arms. It felt so right, so amazing to do nothing but lie with the woman I'd fallen for on my chest and pretend that this was my life. I wanted it to be my life more than anything. But seeing the emotional distress Charlotte felt watching a woman she'd really just met dying was a glaring reminder that it couldn't be my life. This woman finally had all her pieces, and I wasn't about to take one that I might never be able to give back.
Chapter 32. Charlotte. "Will she suffer?" Reed stood behind me, squeezing my shoulders as we spoke to the doctors outside of Lydia's room. Jason had said they were facing some tough decisions, but hearing the team of doctors recommend turning off life support this morning made it real. Really real.
"We're giving her a sedative and pain medication to keep her calm and relaxed," Dr. Cohen said. "We would increase the dosage before we remove the ventilator so that she wouldn't feel any pain."
"How long would she... Is she even capable of breathing on her own?" Jason asked.
"It's hard to tell. There's always exceptions, but in general, with a patient in your mother's medical state, we wouldn't expect her to make it more than a few days. Likely less."
Jason swallowed. I could see he was trying to hold back tears. Reed and I had been standing on the left side of the three doctors that had come for rounds, my brother on the right side alone. I walked over and stood next to Jason, taking his hand. He looked at me, nodded, and cleared his throat.
"We have another brother that goes to college out in California. He's flying in tomorrow. I'd like to wait and discuss it with him and also give him a chance to see her."
"Of course," Dr. Cohen said. "You take your time and get your family together. We're not rushing you. Your mother is comfortable. She just has no reasonable prospect of a meaningful recovery at this point. So it's a matter of time, and the time needs to be right for you and your family. If I felt that she was suffering, I'd push harder.
But take a day or two and give it some thought.
He dug in the breast pocket of his white coat and took out a business card and pen. Jotting something on the back, he offered it to Jason.
My cell phone is on the back. If you or your family has any questions, just give me a call. Anytime. I'll be back tomorrow morning to check in on everything.
Thank you, we all said, one after the other. After taking a few minutes in the hall to talk without the doctors, the three of us went back into Lydia's room. I sensed that Jason needed some time alone, so I asked Ree to take a walk with me and told my brother that I'd pick us up some lunch. The Texas heat was thick outside of the hospital. Both of us seemed lost in thought as we walked side by side on the path around the building. I need to call Iris, I said. I feel terrible taking time off when I've only been there a few months, but I can't leave.
Of course. And no need to call her unless you want to talk. I've kept in touch with her, and she knows what's going on. We had a long-term temp before Iris hired you, so I contacted the agency she was with to see if she's available for a 30-day assignment. I figured you would need some time here,
he looked at me,
and after.
Thank you, I shook my head. I honestly don't know how to thank you for everything, Reed. For finding her, for taking me here, for staying with me, for holding me while I sleep. None of this would be possible without you.
Stop thanking me, Charlotte. If the roles were reversed, you would have done the same for me. I'm sure of it.
We walked in comfortable silence twice around the hospital, but I couldn't stop thinking about all that Reed had done for me. He was absolutely right that if the roles were reversed and I could help him, I would, which made me think about the value of my previous relationship. After 4 years with my ex-fiancé, I was lucky if Todd brought me chicken soup from the Chinese restaurant when I was sick, and he had to pass the restaurant on his way over to my place. Reed had put his life on hold because I needed him in mine. I wasn't even sure when he'd made hotel arrangements or spoken to Iris. He must have been doing things while I slept so he could give me his full attention while I was awake. I'd noticed that he didn't spend his time scrolling through his phone when we were together. Another thing Todd wasn't capable of doing for me. God, that Allison is a moron. Reed gave, fully and unconditionally, even to me, whom he wasn't planning on promising his heart to, for better and for worse. Unfortunately, the more I thought about how generous he was, the more I realized I'd monopolized enough of his time already. Reed worked 10 to 12 hours a day, normally. Our little trip would have him backed up for weeks. You should be getting back to New York. I'll be okay on my own.
I'm not leaving you here alone, Charlotte.
Really, I'm fine. Reed flashed a face that said bullshit.
I hate to tell you, but you're not fine on a normal day, darling.
I laughed. That's true. But you can't stay here and hold my hand forever. We have no idea how long it will be. It could be weeks. Reed stopped. It took me a few paces to realize I was walking alone. When I turned back, he said,
Do you want me here with you?
Of course. But you have to work. You've already done so much.
I can handle a lot of my work remotely.
Not showings, you can't.
I have staff that can fill in for me. I'm here as long as you need me.
He held out his hand.
And I rather enjoy holding your hand, if you want the truth.
I placed my hand in his and walked the 2 steps to close the distance between us. Pushing up on my tippy toes, I kissed his cheek, then whispered in his ear, That Allison? Total fucking moron. 9 days after we'd arrived in Houston, Lydia Vanderkamp died at 11:03 p.m. on a Sunday. Reed, Jason, my youngest brother Justin, and I were all at her bedside when she simply took her last breath. It had been less than 24 hours since they'd removed her from the ventilator. Nothing could have prepared me for that moment. After the doctor pronounced her legally gone, a priest came in and said a few words. Then we took turns saying our goodbyes. Reed offered to stay with me while I said mine, but I felt like it was something I needed to do on my own. She was gone,
but I hoped her spirit could hear me as I spoke. Hi, Mom. I'm so glad I got to know you. You're probably thinking I'm a little crazy for saying I got to know you when you weren't awake the entire time I've been here. But I did get to know you because I got to meet my two brothers, who you raised. They're loving and kind, and the type of men who are a living testament to good parenting. So, while we might not have had the opportunity to chat, I got to know you through them. And you're really pretty great. I wiped a few tears from my cheek. I know it mustn't have been easy for you to give me up. My brothers said you always felt like I took a piece of your heart the day you left me at that church. Well, I feel the same way right now. A piece of my heart that I just recently found is missing again. It disappeared when you took your last breath. Someday we'll meet again and make each other whole. I leaned down and kissed her cheek one last time. Until then, I'll have an angel watching over me. I didn't even remember walking out of her room that last time, or even saying goodbye to my brothers before we left the hospital. On the ride back to the hotel, Reed kept asking me if I was okay. I thought I was. Thought I'd made peace with finding her and losing her all in barely a week's time. I wasn't crying anymore and didn't feel distraught, oddly. But there's a difference between finding peace and going numb. It wasn't until we were back in our room and I went into the shower that everything hit me. I'd stepped under the water fully dressed. Hot water sluiced over my back, making my clothes droop from weight. I squeezed my eyes shut and started to cry. My shoulders shook and sobs racked my body. Yet for the first 20 or 30 seconds, no sound came out. But then the cork popped off the bottle, and it all started to pour out. I cried hard, really hard. A sickening, howling wail gurgled from my throat. It didn't even sound like it came from me. I leaned against the tile to keep myself up. I vaguely heard the bathroom door click open, but Reed's presence didn't register until he was right behind me standing in the tub. He wrapped his arms around my waist from behind.
It's okay. Let it out. I got you.
I leaned back, shifting my weight from the wall to the man standing behind me, and pressed my head to his chest. I cried for so many things. Lydia dying so young, my brothers being without a mother, never being able to hear her voice or see her eyes. My mother, my amazing adopted mother, who did everything right, yet I could only give her 99% of my heart because the other 1% belonged to a woman I'd never known. Reed just stood there, one hand holding me up and the other stroking my sopping wet hair. We stayed like that for a long time, until the water turned cold. Eventually, when my tears ran dry, he reached around me and twisted the knob to shut off the water. It squeaked as he wound it.
Let me get you out of these clothes.
Shivering, I nodded. He knelt down in front of me and unbuttoned my jeans. Peeling the soaked denim down my legs, he looked up at me and spoke softly.
Hold my shoulders. Step out.
Doing as I was told, I pulled one foot from my jeans, then the other.
I'm going to take off all your clothes so I can get you into something dry, okay?
I nodded again. Reed slid my wet underwear down my legs and I stepped out, this time at least without needing to be instructed to.
Lift your arms.
He pulled my soaked t-shirt over my head and unfastened my bra, letting the heavy clothes fall to the tub floor with a loud thunk. I still hadn't moved an inch as he stepped out of the tub, grabbed a towel and shook it open before wrapping it around me.
You okay?
He asked again, more nodding.
Come on, let's get you dressed in something warm and into bed under the covers.
I finally spoke. But you're soaked too.
I'll get out of my clothes after we get you settled.
I shook my head. No, I'll wait. Reed's eyes lifted to mine, and he seemed to mull over what I asked. Although hesitant, he wouldn't deny me anything in the moment. He closed his eyes and nodded. The air conditioning was frigid, making wearing wet clothes unbearably cold. Even wrapped in a dry towel, I still trembled. Reed had to be freezing, yet he didn't show it. He unbuttoned his drenched shirt and let it fall to the pile on the floor of the tub.
His thin undershirt followed next. He hesitated at the button of his jeans, looking up at me one more time before opening them. I stared, waiting until he continued. He peeled one pant leg down his long leg, and then the other before bending to step out.